The Bible says that in the last days, knowledge will be increased and mankind will run to and fro. That sounds like our day with the invention of the internet, electronic devices, and the frenzied way that we interact with them. So how much time did you spend today flitting from one task to another in quick succession? And have you ever stopped to think what that might be doing to your brain? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello and welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Multitasking reduces efficiency and performance because the brain can only focus on one thing at a time. And driver distraction is a factor in at least 25% of all auto crashes. Here's a message from the Oregon State Police Department.
My daughter Lexi, she had a heart of gold. She was full of energy and full of compassion. We would go to breakfast and she'd be like, "That guy's a veteran." So we would buy him breakfast. We would see someone homeless. She would, "Mom, just give me a couple dollars." She would go out of her way to make sure that everyone felt included. Fishing with my dad, she loved it. It was their time. Family, friends knew. They threw a pool party. She would be the lifeguard. She always, I mean, literally always had her phone. She slept with her phone. She ate with her phone. She showered with her phone. She was very social. Everyone loved her. When she left her friend's house, there was evidence of texting or Facebook. She dropped into a dead zone, and about the time of the accident is when cell service would have kicked back in. Wasn't her phone binging off saying, "Hey, notifications are coming through"? I don't know. All I know is that she would look down, and that wasn't the place to look down. And I know if she had it to do over, she wouldn't. She had the world ahead of her.
We've noticed a tremendous increase in fatal car crashes here in Oregon. We can rule out impaired driving or fatigue driving, and during the investigation, if we can get access to the phone, we can go through the phone records or through statements that people tell us that they were on the phone. One of the tools that we're using is unmarked vehicles. They're out there to help us save lives. We can detect those handheld electronic devices or other distracted driving. Anybody that's out there on the road is in danger if somebody's on their phone. What we're asking people to do is to take a pledge, not only from themselves, but to talk to family members and friends. Ask them to just stay off their handheld electronic devices and focus on the road.
There is a void that I don't think will ever fill. If I can stop one person from having to go through what my family went through, there is no phone call, there is no text that is worth taking your eyes off the road for 1 second, because that's all it takes. It just takes that one moment.
That moment when your eyes are off the road. On today's show, we'll talk to an expert about reining in those momentary distractions in order to increase efficiency and productivity. We'll study the strong connection we have with the sun, plus we're in the kitchen to create a delightful side. But first, the news. In the headlines today, chocolate changes cognition, postnatal depression prevention, and spicy food, spicy attitude. A cup of hot chocolate may be good for the aging brain, say Italian researchers who reviewed previous studies and found that daily consumption of a special flavanol-rich cocoa improved cognitive function with increased processing speed, executive function, and working memory. Drinking a cocoa drink low in flavanol does not. And in Denmark, a study of 55,000 people found that those eating 2 to 6 servings of chocolate a week had 20% less chance of irregular heartbeats or of atrial fibrillation. But before you start on your chocolate diet, remember we're talking European chocolate. It's darker, low in sugar, and should also be non-alkalinized. Staying physically active during and after pregnancy reduces the risk of postpartum blues. A new analysis of 12 studies involving almost 1,000 women showed that even walking with a baby stroller is linked to a lower chance of depressive symptoms in new moms. The research looked at duration, frequency, intensity, and type of activity and found help from all sorts of activities, including stretching, breathing, walking, aerobic activity, Pilates, and yoga. Post-baby blues affects 1 in 9 women with a downstream effect on their babies. So moms-to-be, make exercise a part of every day, beginning in pregnancy. Hot, spicy foods just might be associated with being hot-headed, according to a recent series of 3 studies in India. In the first study, those who reported enjoying and eating more spicy food also reported being more aggressive. So in the second study, participants were given a snack dipped in either spicy or non-spicy sauce, then asked to complete a questionnaire. Those who had the spicy dip were more likely to exhibit aggressive thinking. In the third study, participants simply looked at pictures of food that was either spicy or non-spicy, and then completed the questionnaire. Surprisingly, even those looking at images of spicy food had more aggression-related thoughts. So if you want to be more tolerant and calm, skip those hot spices and think cool. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Today's guest is Margaret Moore, or Coach Meg, an executive wellness coach and co-author of the book Organize Your Mind, Organize Your Life, which we'll be discussing, and later a book Organize Your Emotions and Optimize Your Life. The subtitle of this book is Train Your Brain to Get More Done in Less Time, which sounded enticing. Here's Coach Meg on the need for an organized mind.
Now that we know a lot more about what it means to have an organized mind, and we've learned that from the science of attention deficit disorder, and given that people are so distracted and hijacked by their devices today, it just keeps getting worse, then we actually do need help with organizing organizing our minds today.
So it's not something intuitive, it's something that we probably need to focus on and learn. Excuse me.
Yes, well, in many ways, I mean, if you've got attention deficit disorder, you may be lacking some of the organizational software in the brain. However, most of us came with it installed, but we haven't been using it lately. And so, in a way, we're training our brains to go back to the natural order that we had before our lives were so crazy.
Now, you're a wellness executive wellness coach, I should say. What does that mean? What does your work involve?
Well, I work with leaders who are generally kind of mature, looking at their lives and saying, I wonder whether I've got it all figured out. Sort of, you know, is their work life going the way they want? Is their personal life where it's at? Is their health and well-being in need of an upgrade? And I often say, so my main day job is a school of coaching for health professionals that's trained 10,000 health professionals. And one way to think about coaching is that we help people organize their minds. Because people do get lost around, you know, many aspects of their lives and could really use a partner that understands how to find the clarity and order in all that.
And even at leadership level, yeah.
Well, it's the same for everyone because, you know, multitasking is an epidemic. And, you know, as you'll see from the book, a little bit of it might be okay, but if you've got a high stakes project, you know, where you want to be productive and creative and break some new ground, then multitasking is totally works against those outcomes. So everyone's doing it. So, you know, I mean, I think if you were an adult before the advent of smartphones and computers and the web, then you had a, you know, an early adulthood stage where you did have a more organized mind than today. But for a lot of people who have grown up in this technology era, the idea of deep focus is it's unfamiliar.
And in the next segment, we'll see how this has affected young professionals. But first, this.
What you doing?
Oh, I'm mulching these vegetables. They're organic, you know.
Oh, that's a really good idea because all the vegetables in the market are full of pesticides, aren't they?
So is that fish you're eating.
What?
Yeah.
No way. We all know that the biggest concern with pesticides is with vegetables and fruits, not with fish.
Oh, really? You've never heard of biomagnification?
Biomagnificent?
Biomagnification. You know, the big fish eat lots of little fish, but eat tons of phytoplankton plants living in pesticide-contaminated waters. And so as you go up the food chain, the concentration of pesticide gets magnified up to 10,000 times.
Oh, and I'm eating it?
Uh-huh. Happens with most meat.
Oh, no. So this is a chemical warehouse?
That's right.
So I should have ordered that phytoplankton burger instead.
Go vegetarian. Reduce your pesticides, herbicides, toxic chemicals, and your heavy metals. Doctor's orders. There's nothing like fresh fruit to get your taste buds zinging. And Phil, you've got a great recipe for us today. I'm really excited to taste
great
this.
Great to get our taste buds zinging. Like, it's going to happen because of our lime juice base. So it's going to be perfect.
Mm-mm. So what's it called?
So this is our fresh fruit salad. And we're going to be making this with 2 tablespoons of lime juice, 1 tablespoon of alternative sweetener, 1 cup of sliced kiwi, 1 cup of sliced mango, 1 cup of sliced banana, 1 cup of berries, and that's just about it.
Okay. Sounds
it's
yummy.
It's very easy.
Looks beautiful.
Okay, yeah. So...
that looks like erythritol, is that right?
That's correct.
Because it looks just like sugar, but not quite the same. It's got a kind of a cubey look to the crystals. It looks great.
So I'm going to be mixing that with our lime juice, and that's how I'm going to start our base you are cutting our mango over there.
Oh, I'm the lucky one. I get the mango. I never know whether to go by smell, by feel. I wait till it turns a little bit rotten and then I go for it. And well, sometimes, you know, I'm too late.
I can believe that. Everyone has their own sort of style. So I guess what's important is what works for each person. So I have whisked up our sugar alternative and our lime juice.
Mm-mm.
And so we've got that, and that's going to form the base that we are going to put all over our fruit. I'm going to slice up this kiwi. Well, it's something that I don't know if I've got lazier or what, but I actually just enjoy it. If I'm eating kiwi, I'll just take
really?
A bite out of it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, good for you.
So what we're doing is we're dicing this, and we're going to just kind of make it edible pieces so that it doesn't get too difficult to eat, but we don't need to mince it or anything like this.
Well, I'm afraid the mango is going to come minced because I'm just not doing so well over here. And then the kiwis are just full of vitamin C. Did you know bananas have got B vitamins in?
I did not.
Mm.
We think of potassium, and that's pretty much all the people think about with the bananas.
I know, and it's not that high in potassium, actually, compared to some other foods. But, yeah, we think of bananas, we think potassium. And also, it's good for a happy mood. So it boosts serotonin.
Oh.
Yeah. So I say that's why the banana comes like a smile. You got that?
I like that.
Yep.
All right, so while you're doing that, I will cut up our banana.
All right.
Our smile.
I love having fruit salad. I have a fruit salad every morning.
When I was a kid, my parents would tell me that they felt that fruit was a terrific dessert. And I disagreed completely.
Because you were born with that sweet tooth, right?
Right. But now that I've gotten older, I think this is a terrific way to end the meal. Especially it's not full of sugar or fat or anything like that. And what we've got is some great nutrients.
Yes, we do. Awesome. And beautiful colors. There
and
you go.
I'll take this.
I'll throw
smile fruit on my hands.
You've got smile fruit.
So to wrap it up, we've got all our cut fruits, we've got our berries, and we're just going to toss it together here into our lime juice.
Gorgeous colors.
It's
nice
beautiful.
Choice of fruit, Phil. I must say, the red, the green, the yellow, and the white, and
Yep. So we've got our lime juice on everything. It's a good idea to let something like this sit a little bit so that the flavors can kind of meld together. But otherwise, you've got your fruit salad.
All right. Well, this just looks too good to be true. I love that lime juice.
Mm-hmm.
Just fresh.
And that's what makes it pop. That's what makes this different from just fruit salad on the side or something like that. That lime juice really just comes in. Gives a great flavor.
That's right, it does. So try it. Remember, all our recipes appear on our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Before the break, we were reminded that since the introduction of electronic devices, we have lost deep focus. Though walking while texting has the appearance of focus so deep we lose touch with reality. Watch this clip from CBS News.
It's a familiar sight on streets across America. People walking with their eyes on their phone instead of the road. The Urban Dictionary even has a word for it, patextrian.
10 years ago, it would be rare to see people on their phones, and now almost everybody that I see is on their phone.
We spotted Jordan Benston video chatting while crossing the street.
You definitely shouldn't. I know I shouldn't, but I still do it.
The internet is full of videos of people on their phones having accidents. But some can be more serious, like this woman walking into a fountain, or this man accidentally falling on the train tracks. No train was approaching at the time. Distracted walking injuries are becoming so common, the National Safety Council, or NSC, is including them in its annual injury report for the first time. The group says the numbers have jumped with the growth of cell use, from less than 500 15 years ago to more than 2,000 in 2011.
It's common for distracted pedestrians to fall on the sidewalk or wander into traffic. But the NSC found 52% of the walking injuries actually happen at home.
When you think about the home environment, some of the most dangerous situations can be on stairs where people could have a really bad fall.
Debbie Herzman from the NSC says common injuries include sprains and concussions, and she believes these accidents will increase as more people use cell phones.
And there's now a whole generation who have never experienced life without a cell phone. Today's guest, Margaret Moore, shares a coaching experience that demonstrates the lack of deep focus in that generation.
David Sugarbaker, who at the time was the president of the American Association of Thoracic Surgeons, which is the prestigious, academically oriented surgeons, he asked me to do the science keynote for their annual meeting in Toronto. And we had lunch to talk about why was he interested in me doing that, because I'm not a scientist.
Right.
I'm certainly not a thoracic surgeon. And it turns out that the young generation of surgical residents, so he was at the time, he was at Brigham and Women's, one of the Harvard hospitals, and what he was finding with the residents is that they were unable to sustain their focus on the area of the surgery, the window of the surgery, and so their minds would drift away. And when it came time to ask them to help out, they had lost the narrative of the surgery, so they did not know what to do, and they had missed. And this was, for him, devastating, because this was not the story
of
20,
the past.
30 years ago.
Right.
He'd never seen this before.
And so he brought you in to do
well, so what? I did a talk, which was Organize Your Mind for the Operating Room. And I spent a half day in the operating room because I wanted to make sure I knew how it went. I mean, I'd been on the operating table, but I'd never seen the other side. And boy, did I learn a lot. And I could see all kinds of areas for improvement in collaboration, in teamwork, in putting one's ego aside, in focus, in preparing and connecting with the patient. There were so many mental practices that could be used. The operating room is a place of deep focus. In all of medicine, it is a place where you really can, you know, go into a deep focus. As a surgeon and in an operating room, you've got opportunities for deep focus. You bring your multitasking habits in with you. So, you know, you're reactive and you're thinking about other things and you're hijacked instead of being completely present.
Though your patient would like you to be deeply focused. I mean,
yes. We should.
And really for best
exactly.
outcome, you should be too.
Yes.
So in your book, Organize Your Mind, Organize Your Life, there are six rules of order. So, and the first one is tame the frenzy. Mm-hmm. Explain what that means.
So you know the sensation of having emotional chaos, and we use the word frenzy because it feels like there's a lot of noise, right? And you're trying to, I liken it to driving in driving rain. You're driving the car, the rain is pouring down on the windshield, and you're trying to stay on the road. That's what it's often like today to be human, that there's this rain of emotional frenzy, and you know the dose is too high. So stress is good to a point because it activates us, it gets us excited, and you know, and we're more energetic with the right amount of stress. But when you have too much, it impairs the function of the prefrontal cortex, which is where all the organizing software is. So if the frenzy starts to dim the lights, and it does in fact impair the prefrontal cortex activity, then you are unable to think straight, and you're unable to focus, and you're also very vulnerable to distraction. So everyone needs some practices to be able to kind of quieten that frenzy.
Now, you say this is emotional, so what are the primary emotions here?
Well, that's a good question, because the next book is on Organize Your Emotions. So it just depends on the situation. So let's say you're in an operating room or you're in a high-stakes work situation, then you could be nervous about whether you're competent, whether you're going to be successful at doing it. You could be nervous about impressing people and looking good. You could be feeling lousy and wondering whether you have the energy to get through. I mean, those are probably the big ones. You could be really tired, you know, so mm-hmm. Hungry. So the three main categories of emotions are angry, anxiety or fear, and sadness. And sadness is sort of that kind of depresses you. You know, it slows you down, slows your brain down. It's kind of hard to think straight. Anxiety and fear, I think, is probably the most common. You know, you're just like nervous about whatever. And then anger is like if you've just been triggered by somebody saying something to you or something that angered you, you could also be carrying anger. So it comes, and sometimes you have all of those at the same time.
Right.
You know,
and I think we can all relate to those emotions kind of stopping our thoughts and clouding our thinking.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, that's really helpful. So what's the quickest way to lower frenzy or lower that emotional rain?
Right. So the first step is to notice it. So to pull yourself, my gosh, my brain is frenzied. And so just by doing that, you move yourself into third person. So when you're able to say, hey, there's a part of me that's feeling frenzied, and you immediately create a little distance and you get more wisdom and perspective. So you want to get a little perspective. The mindfulness people would call that meta-awareness, when you're watching yourself on the stage. Hey, look, I look, instead of, I'm so frenzied. Oh, isn't that interesting? I've got a lot of chaos going on right now. So that's, you know, one of the simplest tips to sort of unhook and separate. So just to say, isn't that interesting? I'm very frenzied right now. Let me just do that. Probably the simplest thing to do, and I have it on my new Apple Watch, is to breathe deeply. So if your mind is an energy field, it's up here, right? You want to shift it down and back, into your senses and into your breath. So just imagine emptying your mind's energy field down into your breath. And the body moves at a much slower pace, right? The heartbeat and the breathing is much slower than the mental frenzy. Right. So if you can actually bring yourself down to the breathing pace, that has the impact of calming your nervous system as well.
And beyond breathing, there is another practice I recommend. When he was here on earth, Jesus said things like, "Don't let your heart be troubled," and "Come to me and I will give you rest. Come apart and rest a while." You see, he wants to tame the frenzy in each one of us. He knows that when 1,000 things compete for our attention, we lose perspective and we forget what's important, like spending time in his word and prayer and quietly waiting for him to solve the gazillion problems that we face. However, it takes discipline and practice to ignore those distractions and focus on his word. However, the payback is phenomenal. It calms our mind, boosts our mood, and gives a sense of fulfillment. During meditation, our heart rate variability improves, and that leaves us feeling invigorated and ready to tackle the day. And you'll have spent time in the presence of one who's bigger than the universe, and that's transformative. As a result of the Earth's rotation, we experience a light-dark cycle every 24 hours, and that cycle controls biological rhythms within us that we call circadian rhythms. Now, as light from the sun strikes the retina at the back of our eyes, a signal is passed to an area in the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, and this is the master clock or the timekeeping system that sits in our anterior hypothalamus here, just behind the eyes. And this master clock sends out signals to the rest of our body by switching hundreds and maybe thousands of circadian genes on and off. It also makes hormones. For example, cortisol is released when it's time to wake up in the morning, melatonin when it's time to go to bed at night. Researchers have discovered that organs and tissues throughout our body each have individual clocks that are controlled by their own clock genes. Even cells isolated and grown in a petri dish have their own circadian rhythm. Now, when we travel to a different time zone, we get what we call jet lag. That's fatigue, mild depression, and sleep disorders. So it affects many parts of us. Clock genes are especially important for the organs involved in managing glucose and fat metabolism. That would be the liver, behind it the pancreas, the digestive system, the muscles, and fat. Now, these organs never see daylight, so they get their input from the master clock. But you know, there's a really important timekeeper that they synchronize to, and that's the arrival of food. So when eating synchronizes with the master clock, in other words, if we eat in the daytime, there's harmony and healthy metabolism. But when eating does not coincide with the master clock, or if sleep is disturbed, then metabolism gets disrupted. Disruption in circadian rhythm triggers the release of inflammatory cytokines, and that's a risk factor for inflammatory bowel disease, for example, or leaky gut, cardiovascular disease, all over the body. There are problems with inflammation. It's well documented that people who work nights or stay up late at night are more likely to be obese, have fatty liver, and have diabetes. Have you ever noticed that your appetite is bigger when you're sleep deprived? You sort of want to eat everything in sight, and that's because your circadian clockwork affects the stomach's production of ghrelin, a hormone that stimulates hunger, and so that's working overtime. So less sleep, more hunger. In one study, they fed mice during their usual sleep phase. Now, they're nocturnal, so they fed them during the day. That desynchronized their peripheral clocks and caused obesity and metabolic disorders by inducing resistance to leptin is the hormone that tells us we've eaten enough. It's our satiety hormone. Now, the mice ate to excess, did less running, laid down more liver fat and body fat. Basically, they laid down everything, didn't they? Now, there are more than 2,300 genes just in skeletal muscle that are activated in a circadian pattern. And they're involved in many things like building muscle and in metabolism for the body. The circadian rhythm of skeletal muscle comes from light input from the master clock, but also from meal times and from being up and about. So we should be up and about during the day and resting at night. And because the muscle makes up half of our body mass, well, almost half, it's critical that its molecular clock is in sync with other tissues. Otherwise, like this clock here, then muscle structure and function changes, there's less activity of the mitochondria, or the powerhouse of each cell, and impaired glucose tolerance and insulin sensitivity. Those are precursors to diabetes. Now let's go back to the brain. Aside from the master clock, there are subsidiary clocks in the brain's reward system that causes cravings for food and addictive substances in people who stay up at night or who have sleep deprivation. And the circadian clock is known to impact mood disorders, primarily bipolar disease, seasonal affective disorder, and major depression. So they've used light therapy, dark therapy, sleep therapy, all with good effect, for brain therapy. One new study suggests that bipolar disorder affects people at a younger age in countries that are further from the equator, where the angle of the sun is different, and that the age of onset is actually going down. And that may be because of LED lighting and the LED lights that we even have in our mobile devices. We haven't proven that yet, but that's the theory. Fertility hormones are also affected by internal clocks. Circadian rhythms even have implications for cancer. In one study, metastatic colorectal cancer patients who had a really strong 24-hour wake-sleep rhythm had higher survival rates than those with altered daily rhythms. You know, our skin ages quicker and is predisposed to cancer in the presence, again, of circadian disruption. Now, when God created the sun to rule the day, the moon to rule the night, he planned it for the benefit of our physiology. As much as is possible for good health, we really should let them rule our schedule. Try to synchronize the circadian rhythms in your body by eating at set times during the day and never after 10 p.m. Ensure exposure to bright light on wakening and low light before sleeping. Spend time every day outdoors in natural light and limit screen time as much as possible, especially near bedtime.
Ever heard of metabolic syndrome? Well, it is a disease cluster that includes high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, obesity, heart disease, and type 2 diabetes. And diet may play a role. The Adventist Health Study recently found that almost twice as many non-vegetarians developed metabolic syndrome than vegetarians. Therefore, the non-vegetarians had nearly twice the risk of developing heart disease and diabetes. These findings are extremely significant for prevention. Going vegetarian and avoiding metabolic syndrome is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time to answer your questions. Here's our first one. Someone called and asked, what causes me to have vulvodynia and soreness, mostly during periods? Well, it could be thrush, which is a fungal infection. It could be an allergy to laundry detergent, to soap, to sanitary protection. So avoid talc. Perhaps change soap, sanitary protection, all those things, laundry detergent. And when you do that, avoid all perfumed products because perfume can be a powerful allergen. It could be hormonal, and the way to find that out is if you tried, say, taking the pill for 3 months. But if there's no change, get checked by a gynecologist. Here's our next question. How can the symptoms of fibromyalgia be reduced? Well, fibromyalgia is a disorder with musculoskeletal pain, along with fatigue, sleep, memory issues, and mood problems. And research suggests that the brain amplifies painful sensations. So this is not saying that it's in your mind, it's what the central nervous system does. After an event like trauma, surgery, infection, or stress, it kind of turns up the volume on the pain inputs. And so what should be perhaps some discomfort now becomes painful. And so that may be a way of getting to the root of the problem. So relaxation Massage, deep breathing, and good sleep habits can be helpful. Also, learn to pace yourself. Don't rush into a job and then suddenly find you're flagging. Just pace yourself well, manage stress as well as you possibly can. Exercise is good, even though it will hurt initially. Just start with stretching every time you do an exercise session. Start by doing gentle stretches and then exercise, gradually increasing it. Do it regularly. And things like walking, cycling, swimming, things that are low impact, limit caffeine, and eat a healthy diet. Those all will help. And someone else called and says, I'm 64, diagnosed with a rectal tumor. Is there a role for proton therapy? Yes, there is. And you could call the Loma Linda University Proton Center. You may have seen our show on them. It's the oldest proton center in the country. They're 1-800-PROTONS. That's 1-800-776-8667. Now, remember, if you have a question, send it to us, Facebook, text, phone, or contact us on our website, and I'll be happy to answer those for you. Like us on Facebook and become part of our Go Healthy for Good community. And now, let's head down to the store. Thousands of years ago, these large, starchy, sweet-tasting roots found their way all over the world. They were recognized to be highly nutritious, and so became a staple part of the diet for many people around the globe. They don't tolerate frost, though, and they thrive in moist, temperate climates. They come in so many different colors: yellow, orange, red, brown, purple, and beige. Darker colors are softer and moister, and these attractive earthy colors give us a clue as to one important nutrient that sweet potatoes have: beta-carotene. In fact, just 4 ounces of sweet potato contains the recommended daily allowance of vitamin A. This powerful antioxidant will boost your immune system and slow aging. Great way to eat a sweet potato is to combine it with carrots and red lentils for a hearty winter soup, or simply cut them into half-inch slices. Steam them for almost 10 minutes. Then it's bon appetit. Today's guest is well-known executive coach and author of Organize Your Mind, Organize Your Life, Margaret Moore. In the book, she gives 6 rules of order for an organized mind. The first was to tame the frenzy, which we discussed in the last segment. The second rule is to sustain attention. I asked her if this comes more easily to some than to others.
Attention span does vary. Some people have a longer attention span. I have a very organized mind, which is why I can write a book about the organized mind. And so for me, my challenge is not deep focused, but moving deeply into one state of brain, one task, one thing, not all day long, but for some portion of the day, is where the brain works at its peak. So whatever your important projects might be, ideally you shut down all the distractions and you give all of your attention. Like if your mind, again, the energy field, if it's a beam of light, you bring the beam of light, like a spotlight, into one thing for a period of time. And when you do that, that's where the brain is focused and is working at its peak, the working memory, all of the processing is working well. You're taking in, you're synthesizing things, you're putting new ideas together, you can be creative. This can be creative or not creative, just depends on the task. But you are doing your best work, basically. Mm. And that's from the work of Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. That deep state of focus and flow is a major determinant of psychological well-being. So you want to have some of this every day. You know, and you've got it, so when you're doing interviews, like with me, you're not obviously doing 3 other things. You're in it, so this would be a very good example of that deep focus, which means that you come out of these days feeling like, wow, something good happened. Whereas if you'd been jumping around looking at 6 screens and never quite finishing anything and things are not done to their best and you can't come up with the next idea, you know, that's a very, then you're depleted and, you know, you've got even more frenzy because now you feel guilty because you didn't get enough done. So making sure you invest in these deep focus periods every day is very, very healthy for mind and body.
How do we focus, how do we handle distractions when we're in that, when we want to be in that flow or in that zone?
Right, because the brain has radar and it's keeping track of everything around you. So, you know, it's there to alert you if there's something you need to know about. So you're staying, you know, that ability to pick up other things is there. So it's a similar set of steps as to taming frenzy. So you have a distraction, and initially you just may be hijacked, and you reach and you go and do something else, and all of a sudden 10 minutes went by and you said, I thought I was doing this over here. And you, so then you've lost control. So again, I think the first step is the noticing, is to say, oh, my mind has just been hijacked by whatever, a call, something else. So you want to hit the pause button. That's another way to think about this meta awareness state, is it's a pause. You pause, you notice the distraction, and then you make a decision. Am I going to go with the distraction because that's the right decision right now, or am I going to stay with a deep focus? So you make a conscious decision. And you choose what, and sometimes it's good to go with the impulse, you know, and sometimes it's not. But at least you'd made a choice. And partly what organizing your mind is all about is making sure you're making choices. You're proactive rather than reacting all the time.
Great. Now, and I guess that takes us right into the rule number three, which is applying the brakes.
Yes.
So talk to us about this, because I think this is really important. Many of us struggle with this one.
Yes, so if you're distractible, so what the brakes mean, like car brakes, is that you're stopping yourself from the distractibility. So you've got an important task, and you've just got it, something else came up, you know, or, you know, an online shopping ad or something, and you're like, I'll just go and have a look at that pair of shoes or something. You know, so the breaks is that you break, okay, hang on, before you go running off shopping online or getting up and going to do something else or thinking about something else, before you do that, you put the brakes on and say, okay, hang on, brain, let's, before we go running off chasing after that thing, let's just put the brakes on and make sure that's the right thing to do.
Okay, so this is really about awareness. So much of it is about awareness, isn't it? And knowing.
Yeah, it's kind of being awake and alive in your life and noticing what your mind is doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the mindfulness world has taught us. I think that we had more of it. I mean, I think that we had a lot more reflection time. And when you reflect and you have downtime, so mind wandering time. So the opposite of controlled focus, where you're controlling your attention and you're staying with one thing, is letting the leash off and letting your mind wander. Okay, so those are both really valuable. And letting your mind wander is important because you've been so deeply, you've expended a lot of mental energy in the deep focus, and you've stocked up your working memory. And then you may get stuck. The ideas stop flowing. So if you then go let your mind wander, like taking your dog for a walk, let your mind off the leash and not do anything else and not have any goals, you give it a break, and often the creative ideas come then, right? But you're intentionally letting the mind wander. And when you let it wander, like Saturday mornings, you decide you're just going to go with the flow and you're just going to go from one thing to the next. And you're just going to let your mind take you where it wants to go. You do that, then when it comes to the deep focus, you got that break. And so now you're less likely to have your mind wander. But today's world, instead of letting our minds wander, we're looking at our phones, right?
Right.
They're not wandering. We're on automatic pilot. We're reading a text. We're looking at something. And that's not mind wandering. So the brain doesn't get any break to relax. And then if you do that, then you can come back and proactively reduce and get back in charge.
In charge of the cell phone rather than the other way around. Stand by for the other rules of order after the break.
Music.
Here's another high-stakes environment where serious consequences came for inattention on the job. This clip from the Smithsonian Channel.
In 2009, Northwest Flight 188 from San Diego to Minneapolis, carrying 147 passengers, doesn't respond to calls from air traffic control and is reported as NORDO.
NORDO is a term that's used in the air traffic control business to indicate that a pilot is not talking to anybody in the air traffic control system. So NORDO means no radio contact.
Northwest 188.
It's now been an hour since the pilots were last in contact with air traffic control.
Land, we're still not talking to them. Yeah, you're supposed to be landing mini.
Just tell me what their procedure is if they can't talk to anybody. Do they just hold over the airport and do
that? I don't know.
You can't reach them at all?
Right, I can't reach them on God or anything.
Northwest Airlines Flight 188 has now flown 150 miles past its final destination of Minneapolis.
The worst case scenario is this is the beginning of another 9/11 event. And of course, that has to go through the controller's mind.
Fearing a hijack and a repeat of 9/11, the U.S. military prepares to scramble fighter jets to intercept the airliner. Controllers ask another Northwest Airlines pilot for help.
Frequency 126.32, 2632, broadcast for Northwest 188. See if you can raise that aircraft on that frequency, please.
Okay, we'll do that.
Then, finally,
Minneapolis Northwest 188.
1 hour and 18 minutes of radio silence, Northwest Airlines Flight 188 makes contact with air traffic control in Minneapolis.
There's 188, Minneapolis Center. Go ahead.
Roger. We got distracted and we will respond to Minneapolis. We are overhead to Eau Claire and would like to make a 180. And new arrival from Eau Claire.
Do you have time to give a brief explanation on what happened?
Just trying to get distractions, that's all I can say.
Is there any way you can elaborate on the distraction?
We're just dealing with some company issues here, and that's all I can say right now at this time.
In this incident, increased reliance on automation in the cockpit leads to boredom and distraction, which leads to error. In the wake of the incident, both pilots had their licenses permanently revoked. This incident isn't unique. Pilot distraction is on the rise. Just how much is automation contributing to pilot boredom and distraction?
We've done studies, for instance, where we've had pilots put in cockpits for long duration flights, and we've had them identify targets, basically other aircraft in the vicinity. And they'll fly for 3 or 4 hours, and then they'll count the number of aircraft they saw. And they'll come in and they'll tell you they found 7 or 8, when in fact there were 15. So something happened. They weren't sleeping, but they weren't paying attention. There's no question that boredom can lead to distraction or inattention. And ultimately that can lead to an error in the cockpit.
And the cockpit is not a place for errors. Now back to the fourth rule of order for the brain, which today's guest, Margaret Moore, calls molding information. Here she explains.
This is about working memory, and working memory is, you know, if you think about it as a computer, it's kind of the brain's processing. So let's say you're writing an article, and you want to synthesize a few things. So you have like some notes over here, and you have, you know, this book you want to refer to, and you have, you know, so you've got, you know, this inventory of bits of data that you're synthesizing together. Having a good working memory means you've got all of that at your fingertips. So I like the idea, like the metaphor of an audio board with all the dials. So you sort of have all the dials. You know, okay, I need a little of this, a little of that. Where can I get this? It's all right there. So that's working memory. It's all, you know, your memory is holding on to the stuff that you need to work with. If your brain won't hold, like, oh, I can't remember. What was that thing that I was trying to remember, that picture, that idea? Oh, I can't remember. And, you know, so, you know, that's not a pleasant situation. And so what do you do about working memory? The number one trick for booting working memory is sleep. again, back to rest. So if you get a good night's sleep, then interestingly, the brain puts everything in the right place. There's enough time, it kind of puts things in the right filing drawers and where you'll remember, and then when you sit down, it's all there.
Yes, whereas it's amazing, I call it the subconscious mind, the little man in the basement, and he does all the filing while I'm sleeping. So
that's right, but if you didn't get enough sleep, then that didn't get completed, and you know, the working memory, like you just, there's nothing in the drawers, the cabinet fell over, you know. You're trying to get something done, and you know, you trip over this, you forget, you know, and and actually good nutrition. I mean, all the healthy stuff you would do for your brain will help your working memory.
Wow.
And then,
great.
In fact, you know, what, this is an area that ages if you don't use it. So that's why retiring is often not a good thing, because if you're not solving problems, you're not working your working memory. So,
it's a bit like a muscle, use it or lose
it.
It's
you don't want to uninstall the software because that's how conversations are very good for working memory, because we're synthesizing, I'm listening, you're thinking something, you're knitting things together. So conversations are quite good too.
Fifth rule, shifting sets. What does that mean?
So this is the opposite of deep focus. So the term I like for this is agility, cognitive agility. So agility is the ability to move, if a set is a mindset or a brain state. So let's say like I'm focused on you and I'm connecting with you and I'm feeling you as a human being. Okay, so I do that. And then I go and I read something. Okay, so I move all of my mind's energy field from you to, okay, I've got to figure this out. And I have really let go of connecting with you. And then I come back and I connect with you again. And so that's an example of agility. So I'm in different regions of my brain when I'm connecting with you, because I'm syncing up to you, right?
Right.
And then now I'm in the analytical brain, and I'm like, is it 1, 2, 3? Did I forget this one? Did I, you know? So that agile shifting. And non-agile shifting is when I'm over here and I'm still thinking about you and I'm not processing this list. Or I'm talking to you and I'm thinking about the list. I'm dragging the last task with me. Or I'm thinking about the future to-dos in that moment. So I haven't completely shifted from one thing to the next.
So no task gets done really well.
Yes, so that's multitasking is... at its best, extremely agile shifting from one to the next, to the next, to the next. Okay. And that takes a lot of brain's resources to move rapidly between very different tasks. Like, just think about, that's why being present is so difficult, because you're focused. Now I'm in my senses. I hear, I feel, I notice the sun, I notice what's around me, and then I'm in. Those are two completely different states of the brain.
And different areas of the brain.
Different areas of the brain. Your mind, yeah, you've moved everything around. And so it's not easy to do, and it's another thing that declines with age. Fortunately, there's some games now that are able to give people, they have people in their 70s drive race cars in a game.
Right.
And they can get back. So agility declines after your 20s,
it's another thing.
It's another thing that is worth paying attention to and doing well. So do one thing at a time, and then jump all of your mind's energy field, all the whole spotlight, from this to that,
and do that as a practice. And finally, connecting the dots. We've just got half a minute left, but how do you connect the dots?
Well, the brain connects the dots. I mean, the cool thing about quieting the mind, taming the frenzy, deep focus, keeping the distractions at bay, using all of your working memory, shifting with agility through the day, your brain will synthesize and deliver the connecting ideas, like the creative ideas that allow you to move things forward, right? I mean, that's how everything in this room came about, is somebody created them. And that came from that synthesis, that strategic thinking. So One way to think about it is that you zoom back to see the whole picture. So that's one dimension of connecting. So I stand back and I see the pattern. Another is just when you do all that well and then you leave it and come back, you'll start to see the bigger patterns. So it's both a practice of, you know, zooming out, as well as just what happens. I mean, that's what coaching's all about: deep focus, creativity, agility, new ideas. And then, oh, okay, I see things differently now. Here's a new pattern.
So if you constantly feel like you're working Warp 10 with your hair on fire, I hope Coach Meg has provided a new pattern for organizing your mind and your life. Use the 6 rules of order. Tame the frenzy by recognizing it, observing it, and breathing slowly and deeply. Consciously sustain attention for significant periods of time every day and apply the brakes when distractions threaten to take you down that rabbit trail. Then decide if that's what you should do at that moment or not. Mold information and hold it in your memory, and remember that memory requires adequate sleep and good nutrition. Practice cognitive agility. Shift from one task to the next and back again. Finally, as you master all these rules, connect the dots by bringing it all together. You will feel less stressed, more in control, and will have trained your brain to get more done in less time. That's all from us today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.